financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm all right. How's your week going?
It's going busily, yeah. But yeah, no, it's great. There's a lot going on everywhere in the market, in the workplace. There's plenty to talk about. But today we're going to talk about life insurance.
Okay.
Thank you for playing. No, not life insurance like all the boring details of life insurance. Life insurance from a consumer standpoint, and partly from an agent standpoint. Now, you know, people have pointed out to me lately that they used to think of me like an insurance agent or an investment advisor, and now they think of me as a consumer advocate.
Okay.
So I feel like a consumer advocate, and I have been for many years. But something like this is a little tricky because, you know, there are lots of people in my industry who work with life insurance. Mm-hmm. I write life insurance very occasionally. I don't write many policies, but I wanted to talk about what might be useful to people to protect themselves against some of the less scrupulous things that are out there.
Okay.
Did I just say that? I did. Okay.
You did. And there's all different kinds of life insurance policies, right? We've talked about there's so many. Okay.
There's so many, but let's, for our purposes today, let's just lump them under two categories, term life insurance and whole life insurance. Now, I know people get confused about that. So if you think about term life insurance, it's good for a term. It's good for a period of time, and then it goes away. So it's good for a term of 15 years or 10 years or 20 or 30 years, right? And then it disappears.
Okay.
But it also has lower premiums. It is pure death benefit for a term, a period of time, right? Mm-hmm. Whole life comes in many different flavors and, you know, whole life, universal life, variable universal life. I mean, there are blends out there. Anytime they can give a product a new name and give it new features, they do. But any form of whole life insurance under that huge umbrella will cost you more than term. Some not very much, some a lot more, right, in premiums, but it will build some kind of cash value. Even a stripped down universal life policy that is what I call built on a term chassis. In other words, it's the least expensive of the whole life policies you can buy, but it still is permanent insurance like all whole life is. Even the stripped down basis of that will still build a tiny little bit of cash value just to stay alive. So the major two differences between term and whole life for our purposes today are cash value.
Okay.
A term policy doesn't ever build any cash value. It is you pay the money for a straight life benefit, and it will end whenever that term policy ends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is whole life, do you have to have a physical for that or for both or for some?
It depends on your age and the amount of coverage you're buying. But physicals are common. Sometimes it's just medical questions that you answer. You don't have to have a regular physical. Sometimes they'll do medical questions and a blood draw. You know, so the underwriting, that's called underwriting. The underwriting details are on a case-by-case basis, depending on what the company who is selling you the insurance requires of someone of your age and your health. Parameters. Okay. So there are two major things I want to talk about today, given that brief but probably still confusing background. I want to talk to people who are considering selling their life insurance policy for some reason. And I want to talk to people who are considering buying a life insurance policy for the purposes of paying off debt.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Now, let me tell you. There are times that both of these might make sense. But in my experience, there are many more cases that I see where it didn't make sense. And that's why I'm here to talk about it today.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about people who sell their life insurance policy. Now, these are called life settlements, right? And they come in different forms of life settlement, but most often they're available to people who are 65 years and older, mm-hmm. and or who are in poor health. Now, okay. the idea is that you take your life insurance policy that you no longer need and you sell it for an influx of cash.
Okay.
This could, in theory, be a good thing to do, but there are many reasons it's not. So let's talk about the pros of that first. The pros of selling your life insurance policy. Well, the obvious one is you get immediate cash, mm-hmm. right? You're going to get money in the door. You're going to get a higher payout than the surrender value. In other words, if you're looking at your life insurance policy and you're saying, boy, I really need this money and I'm tired of paying these premiums. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? You might think, well, I'm going to surrender the policy. I'm going to cash it in and take the cash value, right?
Okay.
And that would give you some money. Now, that might also, we'll talk about cons too, but that might also cause a taxable event for you, depending on how much you've paid into the policy. But let's say the surrender value is $5,000. Mm-hmm. You could choose to say, I'm going to cash in my policy. That's a famous phrase, cash it in, right? And take mm-hmm. my $5,000 and I'm going to walk away. And you will have paid all those premiums you paid over the years for no coverage anymore. You had coverage while you paid it, but then the policy is gone, okay? If you're going to sell that policy to someone, they're going to keep it in force, right? They're going to pick up the premiums and start paying them. Sadly, it sounds like, but there's no other way to say this, gambling on the date that you're going to die and they're going to collect. Whew, isn't this creepy?
Who can do that though? Your kids, you mean, carry it on?
Well, the kids probably wouldn't buy your policy. They would probably just say, hey, mom, dad, I know you're having trouble paying those premiums. We'll pick up the premiums because we're going to be the beneficiaries. But other people, investors, believe it or not.
Okay.
And you see these ads. It's grim, yeah.
Yeah.
You see these ads on TV that say, you know, sell your life insurance policy. You know that policy you don't need any longer. Mm-hmm. Well, it's true. If you have a life insurance policy that you no longer need, let's say you took it out and you were paying premiums on it when you had a bunch of debt and you were covering your spouse's income, et cetera, but now your spouse maybe has predeceased you. Maybe you don't have any debt. And maybe your kids are all working jobs and buying houses and living fat
they're
and healthy
okay.
and they don't need your money. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're okay with it. You could say, well, what am I paying these premiums for? I'm going to leave mm-hmm. this money to charity. Maybe, you want to do that, but maybe you don't. Maybe you just say, I don't want to pay for this policy anymore. In that case, if you qualify, and that again, usually you're over 65, usually you may be in poor health, but if you qualify, then you could find an investor or they will find you. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. they will find you and they'll say, we're going to buy your policy with your $5,000 of cash value. Now, I'm totally making these numbers up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
we'll give you, you know, $8,000, $15,000, whatever they think it's worth to them based on your usually government expected lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is they're making an investment. They're saying, don't cash your policy in, sell it to me instead. I'll pay you more than your cash value, mm-hmm. but less than your death benefit. And you no longer will have that life insurance. I will own it. I will be the beneficiary on it. Okay.
Right.
So when you die, I get all the money. Now, one of the reasons they do this is because life insurance proceeds are tax-free. So from an investor standpoint, or from your beneficiary standpoint, this is a very nice thing to get tax-free income.
Mm-hmm.
Where it gets fuzzy for me is the negotiation part. You know, how does somebody who's a skilled investor negotiate with somebody who's looking at what they believe is a useless policy, wanting to get some money out of it? So
right.
that's where it worries me. That's where I'm hoping regulation will happen, will step in, will make things safe for the consumer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're kind of out there on your own in these kinds of things. And I worry about people with that.
If you just do a settlement without the investor, is it kind of like a 401k where if you take money out early, you get penalized?
That's a very interesting question. Yes and no. Now,
okay.
you don't get penalized. If you can either... if you want to call it a penalty, if you cash your policy in and you give up the death benefit and you take your money and walk, you're not penalized by that, other than the fact that you've paid premiums and now you no longer have death benefit. But you may have a taxable event if you paid, in more than you're taking out, you won't have a taxable event. But let's say you paid in $3,000. I have to say I'm not an accountant, right? Let's say you pay $3,000 in and you took $5,000 out. That $2,000 may be considered a gain depending on the tax laws that year.
Okay.
And you might, you might get a 1099 for that. However, the other way to take money out of your life insurance is to borrow against that cash value. Now, that can be a good way for people to do it when they need a short-term fix. Like, gosh, I have $5,000 in this policy and I need to do a car repair and I don't have the cash to do it and I don't want to put it on a credit card. Maybe I'll borrow against my life insurance policy for $3,000.
And I'll either choose... Bringing it back to the 401k for a minute, do you need qualifying events like you would there to borrow?
No.
Or you can borrow for any reason?
Yes, and you are borrowing your own death benefit. So this is where keeping a whole life policy could be a good benefit to you if this kind of scenario comes up. So you could borrow against the death benefit. Let's say you borrow $3,000 of your $5,000. Now, legally, that loan does not need to be paid back. You have borrowed against your own policy.
Okay.
But it will have an interest rate on it. So let's say the interest rate is 5%. Okay, or 4.25%. Every year, you're going to get a bill for that interest. Now, if you just pay the interest, you'll keep that loan stable at $3,000. You need to understand that when you're borrowing against your life insurance policy, even though you're taking the cash value out, your death benefit will be reduced by that amount if you don't pay it back. So that's okay. A lot of people will say, so what? I had a $50,000 policy. I borrowed $3,000 from it. If I die tomorrow, it pays $47,000. I don't care.
Right.
The thing you want to be careful of is paying that interest to keep it from growing and growing and growing. You don't want to die and find out that your $3,000 loan became $20,000 over the course of time.
If you do decide to borrow, say you decide to borrow $5,000 out of your life insurance policy, do you have to get approved for like a loan, like a bank loan, or are you automatically like, hey, that's your money, you can take it?
It's your money, you can take it.
So
probably
you really
take you about 10
days.
Using
this as like a short-term loan kind of thing.
You could be, yes. And so that's another reason why, and I'm not trying to advocate either one or the other side of this. Truly, I'm not. There are reasons that these options make sense for people. What my message is get some help or make sure that you know what the reasons are. I want to go through some cons about selling your life insurance policy before we get to the break. And one of them is, of course, you're going to get a lower payout than the death benefit. So if you bought your life insurance policy to cover your spouse or your kids, and you cash it, you sell it, not cash it in, you sell it for, you know, a quarter of what it was worth, you need to be able to reckon with that, right?
Yeah.
My recommendation would be talk to your family about it. Make sure they're okay about it, because they might say, no, don't sell. Keep me on as a beneficiary. I'll pay the fees that you're having trouble paying and I'll pick up the premiums. You know, at least give your... Here's my pitch on this. At least give your family the same courtesy that you're giving a stranger who might want to buy your policy.
Yeah.
Give them a first option to keep it, okay? There might be tax implications if you sell your policy. So again, maybe you've put, you know, $15,000 into it and somebody comes along and wants to buy it for $20,000. That $5,000 might be a gain. Mm. And so you might end up holding less money than you thought you were going to. There are eligibility restrictions. So this is where I'm saying most of the time they want somebody who is either terminally ill, sad, but true.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, while I'm saying this, if you are terminally ill and you're listening to this, check your insurance policy because you might have a feature you don't even know about on your death benefit that allows you to take two or three times the value of your death benefit while you're alive to pay for your health care.
Wow,
so
okay.
Don't give this up without checking first about what your benefits are. And obviously, you're going to lose that death benefit if you sell this policy. So that's the loss of the coverage is a major con. And then one last, well, I guess there's two last things. One is that these companies will require access to your medical records and your personal data. So there's a privacy issue there for me. If that's what you want to give up, that's up to you. And then the potential impact on any government plans. If you're on Medicaid or any other needs-based plan, and you get an influx of cash from selling your life insurance, it might affect your benefits. I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just saying, ask about it first.
Yeah, that's good to be aware of, because you don't want to get like less of a check of something else. All right, we'll get into more of this coming up with part two of Financial Fitness. First, I'd like to get your number.
Thanks. Part two will be about what you do if you're thinking about buying a life insurance policy to pay debt. And our phone number is 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. You're hanging in there with me, and you're asking great questions. I love that.
We're talking life insurance, and there's a lot to it. We got into a lot in the first half. What are we talking about here, about the policies?
You know, I never thought that you would have so many questions about life insurance, that you would be so engaged. It was really surprising, but the point that the things that we're talking about are not your regular everyday life insurance topics, right? So in the first half, we did talk about life insurance if you're looking to sell your policy to bail out and get some cash. But along those lines, I want to point out that there are many agents now offering to get you out of debt by having you buy a whole life. Remember, we talked about whole life are the ones that build cash value, some form of whole life policy in order to build the cash value to help you get out of debt faster. Now,
okay.
You probably know what I'm going to say already, but I will tell you that I'm sure there are cases where that makes sense for people. Particularly if they've already maxed out every other opportunity, okay? They've already maxed out their 401k and their IRAs and their savings, and they've got no place else they can put money, or they really need to build money on a tax-free basis to balance out their portfolio, and they have a need. Boy, I could say that about six times. And they have a need for life insurance, okay?
Okay.
In my book, now this is just my opinion, no need for life insurance, not the best investment. Somebody will argue with me, right? I can say that I have people in life insurance who use it as an investment.
Okay.
But that the part of the reason is because they need that, or they want that tax-free death benefit for estate planning purposes. That in itself is a need. Okay. So there are legitimate reasons to buy a life insurance policy. One, that have to do with debt, okay?
Okay.
One is protecting your family from debt. You own, you know, you have outstanding debts like a mortgage, a car loan, personal loans, and you pass away, your family may be responsible for those debts, and a life insurance policy means they have the money to pay those.
Okay.
Before you decide that, ask an attorney or an agent to show you in writing which debts your family is responsible for, because credit card debt isn't one of them. Okay.
Oh, wait, it is one of them?
No, credit card debt gone.
Okay,
unsecured debt gone. Okay. So don't let some agent talk to you about your massive debt that you have to pay off, and therefore you need an enormous policy if most of it is credit card debt, or if you're single. Okay. If you're covering co-signed debts or joint signed debts, right? If you have co-sign loans like student loans, business loans, mortgages, then your co-signer or your spouse might be responsible for paying for them. Again, you can check that. But having life insurance has a benefit. I'm not anti-life insurance. I never have been. I started in the business at John Hancock a bazillion years ago with life insurance and understanding the benefits of it. It can, I'll tell you, there's almost no better feeling that you can do for somebody who is grieving than to be able to, if you don't know them well, right, you're not their family, you're not their loved one, than to be able to show up and say, here's the money tax-free to relieve you of the financial burden, okay? That's really worthwhile. Okay, estate planning and final expenses, right along those lines. That's what you want to be able to do with a life insurance policy. You want to make sure that your bereaved spouse is not worrying about how they're going to pay the funeral expenses or the mortgage next month, right? And so that's what life insurance is for. And last but not least, I would say business debt protection. Those are all reasons you'd buy life insurance when you're trying to use it to ward off debt in some way. Those are legitimate reasons that life insurance policy helps with debt. Okay. Whew. Let's talk about what I don't like about it. What
Let me
I don't
ask a question
like.
Right here, real quick. Sure. Do people overbuy life insurance, not the like overbuy the amount?
It's another really good question. So there are times when it makes sense to buy up a little bit. Life insurance is what we call banded, right? So you will get a better rate on $250,000 than you will get on $242,386.
Okay.
All right. So there are times that it makes sense to buy up. If a life insurance salesperson is trying, or an agent or broker is trying to sell you more insurance than you think you need or than you feel is right. And again, this might just be to leave it to charity, right? You don't have to have proof of debt to buy a big policy. You might just want some tax-free income or some tax-free, benefit at the end. But if you feel like you're getting pushed into, but you should buy more because of whatever, that's a time when you step back and say, I'm not so comfortable with that. Let me see if I want to buy that much insurance, if I can afford to buy that much. Okay. One of the things that salespeople do in order to get you to buy more life insurance is what I said. They overstate your debt, right? They say, here, you have all this debt. Let me give you some guilt about that. You don't really want your family to have to deal with that. Here's why you need this policy, okay? These things are what I say are unethical, unscrupulous, morally lousy. They give the business of being in the insurance or the investment name. And there are plenty of people who deserve a good name in the industry. Again, if your dependents have co-signed debt, it could make sense for you to buy this life insurance, but if you're single and most of your debt would be discharged upon death, what do you care? Right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the unscrupulous part that bothers me. The sales pitch is this. You're paying a lot of debt and you're paying your lenders. So why not bank on yourself and put your money into this life insurance policy, because it's going to build cash value. And in a certain period of time, this cash value is going to be valuable enough that you can pull it out and pay off your debt. Doesn't that sound remarkably to you like the line from debt settlement companies that I complain about?
Anything that sounds too good to be true.
The difference is with debt settlement, they tell you to stop making your payments and you trash your credit. Mm-hmm. With this, they're telling you go ahead and keep making your payments and buy this life insurance. Now, I have so many reasons that I think you could do this in a better way. We won't have time for them all. But the least of which is not, if you can afford that larger life insurance premium, because it will take a lot of money to build cash value, less when you're really young, right? You're 20 years old. This might make sense for you in some way, but you should compare the numbers, right? But if you're 50, you're going to pay a lot for the death benefit and very little for the cash value. And it's going to take years, in any case, for this cash value to grow. In the meantime, you're still paying your creditors these lousy interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
And when you borrow this money out, there is an interest rate on it. So even if you pay yourself back, you're paying interest. And if you don't pay yourself back, you will eat up that death benefit in loan plus interest. Now, here's the big kicker. When you buy one of these policies and you wait until it grows to a large cash value and you borrow that large cash value, guess what you get with large cash value that you've borrowed? Large interest, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to pay interest over years. When that interest plus the loan grows to a certain level, if you have stopped paying your life insurance premiums, which is what a lot of people do at that stage, that policy will implode. In other words, you'll get a letter from the company that says, sorry, you've maxed out your loan and interest. Either pay it back or start paying some sort of higher premiums, or your policy will lapse. You will no longer have this death benefit. That's not the real problem. The real problem is when that policy lapses, all of that money that you took out that is in excess of what you paid in
becomes taxable. Okay.
Where is the agent that sold you this 25 years ago or 20 years ago or 10 years ago at this stage? Okay. It takes a long time to build that cash value. Now, I've had people say to me, oh, no, it has cash value right away. Really? Where did that come from? It came from someplace else that you could transfer it in, another life policy that you could transfer it in from, which you could have used for this already. So what I would prefer people look for is a better solution. Is it ours? Yeah, we're one of them for sure. But there are so many other better solutions than this in many cases, not in all cases, okay? So on a case-by-case basis, if you're looking at this for yourself, you want to be thinking, you really want to be looking at the details. Is it good for me? Am I young? Can I? Do I have a high enough income for many years that I can afford this extra price for a premium? And do I have a need for the life insurance? Then, yeah, there might be a reason to do it. But if you think about it, if you think about the fact that every premium you pay, part of it has to go to death benefit, and the death benefit in turn builds the cash value, right? Then obviously, if you could just pay that money towards, say, a high yield savings account, you would build that cash value more quickly. If you did something like our plan in combination with that, where you had, you just paid off your debt, because we pay off the debt so quickly, we reduce those interest rates down in most cases to less than 3%. That's less than you'd pay on your own policy loan. Right? So you could just do that. And if you have life insurance, you could pick up some term or pick up the whole life if that's what you want. But don't, you don't necessarily need to do it with the idea that you'll wait all these years to get the money to pay off your debt. We could have it paid off by the time that ever happens. You have
so,
a question?
I did have a question.
I can see it. Yeah.
Are the companies, like, if you're taking a loan against your life insurance, is it kind of like credit card companies where they can charge whatever interest they want? Or are there any regulations on, like, you get charged 5% and that's it?
There are regulations. It's in your contract. And it will say either this, it comes with this 4.25% rate, or it comes with prime plus or LIBOR plus, or there will be something in every contract that tells you what your interest rate will be. And it, and you can check with your insurance provider about that. And that's a great question. You should know going in what, if you are going to borrow against that policy, maybe even before you buy it, what's that going to look like for you when you go to borrow it? But again, I'm not anti-insurance. I like the idea of building cash value in policies when it makes sense as part of a portfolio. But in my opinion, and in probably most economists that you would talk to, or good financial advisors, we would tell you that a good, strong financial plan involves a separate plan for debt than it does for your life insurance. Can they be muddled together sometimes? Sure. But in general, I'd say know what you're getting into in either case, whether you're selling your life insurance because you're trying to get cash back, or you're buying a policy because you're trying to pay off debt. Think about that twice in both cases.
This is definitely, I think, a topic where people could use some assistance. So what is your phone number if they have questions?
Thank you, Jess. Yes, it's 413-773-3333.
And we haven't mentioned in a little while, but I want to bring up again, too, if you have a question for the Money Doctor and you want to send in a question, we would love to get it. I love springing these questions on the Money Doctor, and she does not know ahead of time and always does so great with them. But you can send those in at jtyler@whmp.com. If we use your question on the air, you get a copy of the book, which is right behind you.
It is Retire Debt and Retire Well.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram on WHMP. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you today?
I am great. We have a familiar guest with us.
We do. Dr. Bob, I enticed him to come back.
Familiar. What a great term. Hey, it's great to join you guys. Add a little, sports medicine, health and fitness style in your show, because the Money Doctor, hug your money, right?
Hug your money. There you go. That's right.
Really.
For those of you who don't know Dr. Bob and who haven't seen him in a little while, I just want to give him a brief introduction. But Dr. Bob is a radio host and author of Hashtag Hey Sports Parents, which is a great guide if you want to mitigate or learn to manage the costs involved in high school age and other sports. A consultant, a speaker, a columnist. This is besides being a physician, of course. And in 2019, in 2019, he was inducted into the National Fitness Hall of Fame, which acknowledges his contributions to the sports medicine world. So I love that he takes time out to come and be with us. The last time he was coming on the show, we had to abort at the last second because he was called into surgery. So we had to change and say Dr. Bob got called into surgery as a consultant, I think, as an assist or something, right, in that surgery?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes. Yeah? Yes, it was actually it was a patient of mine who was referred to somebody for some ankle procedures. So, yes. And then, schedules always change. So here we are. We're going to be catching up. And it's always great to be with you guys. And, a lot of people don't realize that the financial side of being a parent of a high-performance young boy or girl, being an athlete today who's looking at NIL situations where they're getting paid to be transferred from one school to another, it's nuts. And that's why we want to continue to help educate. You mentioned a lot of the pressures, and they are physical as well as mental in all of these areas when you're talking about any specific, whether you're a weekend warrior or you're a might be the name of the next book, might be Hey Sports Grandparents.
Well, that's, it's a good sequel. Yeah, for those of you listening who don't know what NIL is, name, image, likeness.
Forever, an amateur athlete was an amateur. So an athlete, even though the schools might be making tens of millions of dollars, think of football and basketball, those are the two big sports, with the addition of these particular athletes. But if an athlete wanted to sign a picture or sell a hat or be involved at all in the world of money, they were suspended very aggressively forever. All of a sudden, over the past couple of years, there was this change where the term student athlete was actually a legal term. Because again, if the athlete had injuries during their career, it's years later, they're not covered. The college was off the hook, whereas if you were someone selling peanuts in the stands of within a union, you might have had insurance. So the whole thing blew up with the positive side on the left that athletes would be compensated, and the chaos on the right, where you have transfers of athletes all over the place, and it's turned the world of March Madness upside down. It's added tremendous pressure. And your expertise, which is being able to counsel parents or colleges or individuals, coaches, on how do we deal with this madness of so much money in so many different areas, and the fact that if your son or daughter is on a traveling team or a club team, you're spending tens of thousands of dollars a year. And as the sports doctor, in my new venture where I'm a consultant, I'm going to be a quarterback where I am surrounded with 20 or 30 experts like you in fitness, in the mental side, in nutrition, in sports performance, in parenting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and be able to counsel people on a plan to deal with these tremendous pressures. You know, when you're watching the Olympics, you're seeing a 20-year-old. They've been involved since they're 9. So, and again, that's why I welcome your expertise when it comes to counseling some of these parents who are facing ice time. You know, one of my real subspecialties forever is figure skating.
That's right.
I can't believe we just celebrated the 15th year of my young kid growing up here in Illinois. Evan Lysacek became the Olympic gold medalist in figure skating.
Wow. One more 10th. Time. One more he time, tell the, people who don't
Evan,
know about this
yes,
individual.
Evan Lysacek, 2010 Olympic gold medal figure skating Olympian. And he was 10 years old when I put orthotics in his skates, in my specialty. So that ride that we were on with this whole world of the pressure of these 10, 11, 12-year-olds is a very, very important one. And there's a, both a mental and a physical side, like we talked about. Is your son or daughter in the best shoe? What's the history of foot and leg problems? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I sound like I'm hosting the radio show.
Let me ask our co-host Jess for a second, who has children, because I don't have children, so I don't have the sports thing. What's it like in your household? Do your kids do sports? Can you give us any insight?
It's very expensive, even at like 6 and 7. There's a different sport like each quarter. And, you know, it just adds up. You know, every sport, like with the hockey, they've got to get all the stuff for it. The soccer, the same thing. So you just hope that they want to stick with it. Otherwise, you know, you're spending a bunch of money.
Well, this is very interesting. This is very interesting. You precisely, which is, this is so early, where again, we start to see attention being paid, including specific sports. But here's my pearl for the day, Jess. You ready? Here's the two exercises you want your children to include forever.
Okay.
Number one, strengthen their feet and ankles. Mm-hmm. Rubber bands are a great way. And two is work on balance. And these are the two areas you want to add. Whatever we want to be doing safely, we want to work. And my famous ex-sports therapist, Bob Guida, made such a big deal out of this. Again, whether you were the best athlete in the world or a grandmother. Because, you know, ankle problems is such a consistent problem. And many times your foot mechanics have something to do with it. So if you have a fun way where they're playing, when they learn how to use rubber bands and they learn how to do some balance while you're playing catch, etc. Guida loved mini trams. Now imagine yourself balancing on a mini tram with your catcher's glove on.
You got to tell me what a mini
trampoline.
Tram is.
Yes, a mini.
Yes.
Yes, so the world of trampolines that we, yes, but trampolines that we all know are such fun and whatever are great areas to work on balance. And every time you create imbalance, telling grandma, hold on and stand on one foot a few times a day, work on balance. This is a very big deal. Falls are the number one time problem with super seniors. And lower extremity problems are a big deal when your child starts to play 10 days a week.
Just to jump in, I was just going to say, I know some people that are getting on in years, and they're saying their physical therapists are saying the same thing. Use a therapy band, do these exercises, practice balance.
But learn technique.
Learn
technique. I wrote an article in 2020 about pickleball. And it became, it's the fastest growing sport. Now, people who play tennis in their 60s and 70s have played tennis since they're kids.
Right.
They don't just take it up. Pickleball, you got 60, 70-year-olds thinking they could jump on the court. There's an explosion of problems. So we tell seniors, you don't have to be a champion. But again, you want to be doing some strengthening and make sure you're in condition. Pickleball is physical.
Sure.
You're moving around. And so again, whether you're a super senior or you are a 6 and 7-year-old, you want to stay out of trouble, include balance, and, you know, understand what you do. So if you go to a physical therapist, Athletico for years has offered it for free. They'll show parents a good program that their kids could do at home. And then you can many times follow the same thing yourself. These are some of the things that I've been talking about on the radio. Well, I don't know, 40 years, give or take a few weeks.
Jess, you had a question? I'm sorry, Dr. Bob. Yeah.
Just to throw back what you were saying in the beginning about March Madness, I know that there was a player from USC this week that tore her ACL. So while they won, which was great, she's going to be out for the rest of the season. And I know you're bringing up feet and ankles. I hear about ACLs all the time. Is that a super common one as well?
Well, it's a great question. I am a foot specialist, sports podiatrist, and 50% at least of the young girls I've seen over the years, whether they were volleyball players, soccer players, world class, or kids in the neighborhood, 50% of the girls have knee trouble, and I'm a podiatrist. That's the importance of the relationship. There's always been 5-6 to 1 knee concerns, female to male, because anatomically, besides hormonally, but anatomically, as a young girl is getting older, she starts to go through puberty, her hips widen. Many times there's more of an angle down to the knee. And there is a tremendous relationship. The foot and ankle are complex mechanisms. And whether you have a high arch, whether you have flat feet, all sorts of variables, whether your mother and grandmother had bunions, foot mechanics are inherited. So often we neglect it unless there's problems, but this is something very important. Knee trouble is always, you know, they happen. ACL is a major ligament in the knee. It's the most famous knee injury by far. And then you have Lindsey Vonn. Great Lindsey Vonn, the Olympic skier. She's such an example. I don't know, persistence, superstardom, over 40 years old. I don't know how many knee surgeries, you know, knee replacement. Olympic ski superstar, just won a silver medal. But a great example of the knee concern when we talk about the kind of, especially in female sports, and this explosion of knee concerns. But she's a great example of persistence. And I had to give her a shout out for this incredible sports medicine story.
Hey, Lindsey Vonn. A shout out from Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor and Dr. Bob Weil.
Yeah. Thank you.
Getting it done. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. We want to hear that story, but let's do that when we come back. In the meantime, Dr. Frances Ram, can I get your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, and special guest Dr. Bob on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, and our special guest, Dr. Bob.
That's right. We're back with Dr. Bob Weil, complete with props, flat foot, arched foot.
Yes. And,
you know, I have to
I
say,
got my book
I always
if you
had,
need it. Go ahead.
People wait too long, in my opinion, myself included, until you have pain to correct what might be a slight difference.
Well,
can you talk about that?
Yes. You know, there are three areas I talk about on my radio show, really. One's awareness, two's education, three is action. Awareness of what the heck we're talking about, which is the feet affect all parts of the body. So any persistent lower extremity concern, low back, hips, knees, whether it's arthritis because you've been wearing the joints out, or a chronic problem with a 15-year-old that's always having trouble with her knees or shin splints, and she's on cross country, and we're saying, wow, it's those pronated feet. The feet ankles are complex mechanisms, and there's terms that a lot of people hear, which is pronation, supination, and they are common terms. It's the whole world of the shoe industry, and they're normal motions. And pronation allows you to absorb shock. Every time you land on your heel, you generate about half your weight. Once you start passing over the foot, your foot adapts to the ground. Think you're walking on the beach or you're walking barefoot on the lawn. Your foot accommodates to the surface and your whole leg rotates inward. And that's part of pronation chain. So if your foot collapses excessively, you roll your knee in excessively, a la knee problems. Once you bear weight, the job of the foot is like a lever spring, push you off. The high arch foot, as a rule, is more efficient in pushing off. But if the foot and ankle is rigid, we have problems. In a dancer, man, the balls of my feet, they're always a problem because I'm on the balls of my feet. My back's killing me. And the challenge in dance is we had to be very specific with what kind of orthotic. But ironically, I mentioned Lysacek before. He was on Dancing with the Stars when he won the Olympics. And a couple of the dancers, man, we had them in dress orthotics, color-coded, for their 3-inch heels.
That's right.
So number That's one, right. again, is the understanding that, you know, my grandmother had knee problems. My grandfather always had arthritis. They always had high arches. Should I talk to a podiatrist? Yes. Just the type of shoe could be a key point, Now, when you add dance, a lot of dance is barefoot in some instances. Other times it's ballet. So the tremendous stress on the the whole lower extremity. So the understanding that this stuff could be connected is why, you know, we want to add our 2 cents.
Well, it makes total sense that things would start from the foot up, but it does bring me back to the idea of money. Sorry to say it. As the money doctor, it's always on my mind, right? But the expense involved in things like custom orthotics or the equipment, like Jess's kids, you know, some of the stats are football helmets, pads, and cleats from $500 to $1,000. I mean, hockey, baseball, football, track, all really expensive sports, right? Ice time, like you were talking about for ice skating. So, you know, what happens for parents who are faced with this?
I think they become educated into the fact that it's important to see if there's a recurrent injury problem. They want to be paying attention. They want to be able to communicate with their son or daughter if they're hurting. Again, that serious young son or daughter, they've seen a big problem with these young kids admitting they've got a head problem. They're getting headaches. They can't sleep. They don't feel good. The concussion world is exploded. There is, everybody listening, there is no safe tackle football, period.
That's right.
This is something you need to educate yourself on regarding, again, the expenses. Now, if it's a medical concern, whether it's orthotics or some sort of medical care, of course, there's going to be tremendous priority. But what about if it's a traveling team or if it's a club team? So we want the parent or coach to be able to have the counseling on what's the best way to. I tell every serious athlete, if you become a mom or dad and you know how important sports was to you, talk to the money doctor about trying to be prepared later on, whether your son or daughter is shooting for a scholarship or whatever. At least educate yourself because it is expensive. Yes, it is. And believe me, there's a lot of pressure. The more talented your son or daughter is, the more this we see eating disorders in young dancers or skaters or ballerinas. What do you mean you didn't lose that 20 pounds? Wondering why this kid is in all sorts of problems mentally, you know, with their mental health. So, again, the pressure, the financial pressure, it's big.
Well, I think, you know, everything from just nutritional supplements, right, that the kids might need better diets or nutritional supplements. Yeah, those are expensive.
Point.
Training, coaching.
Well, this is where,
you know,
this is where
club and travel teams you mentioned.
Yeah, this is where the sports doctor's in comes in.
Yeah.
This is what I've done on my radio show for 100 years, which I have surrounded myself by these experts. And so many contributed to my book. Many, like you, have been guests, whether they're sports psychologists, they're nutritionists. I have sports pharmacists, sports cardiologists. Dr. Weil, who do I see? Who do I talk to? Where should my son go to school? Should he pay for a pitching coach? You know, oh my gosh, a third of Tommy John surgery, Francis and Jess,
really?
Are done on teenagers.
Wow.
Think about it. And again, as the quarterback, to be able to talk to a parent, and they can email me at drrwildsportsdoctor@yahoo.com. I have people email me because I have a segment on the show where we talk and include some emails where we might talk about, you know, all of these situations regarding, you know, should my son have a quarterback coach? What about supplements? The key area, R.D. Kate Nutrition, who's contributed to my book, Kate Davis, sports nutritionist, consults with teams, parents, coaches. You know, my daughter's a gymnast. You know, she's got to pay big attention to nutrition. And then you know how much hype there is out there. You got every
and lack
commercial.
Of regulation, right?
Drugs.
Yep.
Do you realize that over 50% of young athletes who were adolescents, listening parents and coaches, over 50% depend on over-the-counter pain medicines, the ibuprofens, the Aleves, well, you know, if she doesn't take one to leave twice a day, man, those heels are hurting her, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we want to be able to pay attention to this. Regarding, you know, again, youth sports is a like $100 million a year or more business. It's very, very big business. Of course, there's a big financial side. Who thought of the world of sports pharmacy?
Boy.
And then Jessica Biel, who in the last year or two has been a guest of mine. And that whole area of sports pharmacy, again, being able to find someone to consult with regarding, you know, whether my son or daughter should be taking this, this, or this, and all this Gatorade and all these commercials. And, you know, what about the diet stuff now, Dr. Bob? Oh, my gosh, what's going on with that? Or diabetes?
Well, you know, even if you get these kids through healthy, right, and they're not, and they're watching their diet and they're not on medicines and they're doing great, let's suppose the best scenario. You get these youth kids, right? You get the youth kids. You get these young kids through the high school years or through the grade school years of sports, and now they're looking to play collegiate sports at a collegiate level. Now we're talking about real money, and we're not just talking about not that the other stuff wasn't real money, right? It can cost you thousands of dollars just to get your kid into a camp off season, but just in terms of recruitment costs, right? Recruitment costs, things like creating a highlight reel, maybe attending a showcase event or hiring consultants, right? This stuff is really expensive.
Oh,
will
yes,
you talk about what you see?
Yes, well, along the new challenge of that NIL, that name, image, and likeness, and the ability that, again, there might be a local car dealer who wants to sign your son if he'll go to university, wherever it is, and getting $1 million. You know, I had a guest on my show a few years ago from the National Publicity Summit, this great organization that meets a few times a year with Bradley Communications. It's all about meet the media and all of these different types of topics. Yeah. And they were talking about the fact that 33% or more of multimillionaire professional athletes were broke after 10 years. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, is that possibly true? And it was, again, this high end, maybe an athlete signing a contract for $100 million has got who knows what goes on in their life. Lucky them. I think that's fantastic. But that statistic knocked me over, that it was even close. There was that kind of challenge. I won't say ignorance. I'll say challenge in that athlete, that young athlete, their family, and the world of multi-million. You know, there was a baseball player just signed for $700 million in 15 years. Went to the Mets, man.
Can I ask a quick question here?
From the Yankees.
Say you're a parent listening to our show today, and I'm wondering, and I don't want to put either of you on the spot, but I'm wondering how much of it for winning these championships in Olympics or events like that is just talent, and how much of it is how well off the family is? Because if you've got two kids that have got equal talent, and you have one that can afford all these things you're talking about, from a sports nutritionist to a physician to all the extra things they need, and one that does not have the money to do that, it feels like as a parent, I would be thinking, oh, you can't even compete unless you have some kind of extraordinary child.
Well, it's a great question. And the idea is, of course, there are two areas everybody cares about. Number one, can I prevent problems? Can I prevent this epidemic of overuse injuries with these kids? And two, can they have a good mental time? Can they stay out of these kinds of pressures? So there's no doubt about it. There are advantages. This is why we want parents and coaches to be educated. And organizations like the National Association of Parents, one of my guests that working with parents in sports from England, Gordon McClelland, these organizations for parents and coaches, iSport 360, to be able to educate parents about what's available. There's no doubt about it that there is an advantage, but talent is, of course, a tremendous advantage. And again, staying out of trouble. So the advantage of a well-off, there's no doubt about it. But at the same time, there's all sorts of expertise available. There are all sorts of organizations. If people will get educated, and this is what we try to add to the mix, where we have different experts on from these areas that can be available to be helpful.
I'm going to jump in too and just say that, Jess, I hear you loud and clear about that sort of class divide when you can't afford this. And I'm going to agree with Dr. Bob that one of the things that that people worry about, that parents worry about, is if my kid gets injured, can I afford these extra medical costs? Can I take the time off work to care for them? Can I pay for the kinds of things they will need? And that's sometimes a deterrent. But I want to reference in closing here, Dr. Bob's book, hashtag Hey Sports Parents, because not only will that give you a link to him where he can maybe tell you some of the free things or some of the available assistance that you can get financially to level that playing field, which I think is what you're talking about. Talent is absolutely important, but as the money doctor, I'm going to say, yeah, I think that people make their decisions based on what they think they will be able to afford or their perceived fear of unchecked expenses going forward. You know, we can't afford a sports camp. We can't afford the ice time. And there are ways around it. And Dr. Bob and I can work together to help anybody who's interested in that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hashtag Hey Sports Parents. Still around on Amazon. My fantastic Hall of Fame volleyballer, Sharky Zartman, was my co-author with that book. Again, my show is The Sports Doctor, and it's on live every Wednesday. We have the adventure of live radio on BBS Radio. But again, you know, this whole world of youth sports, the idea of parents to be educated regarding staying out of trouble, being prepared, including the doctors, the pediatricians, the other individuals who are involved, and the ability to find out different types of information to, again, stay safe and be smart and be educated.
Yes, thank you.
You know, what's more important than these types of areas? So we're always glad to be included, glad that you're on the team of experts that could be helpful. And every once in a while, we try to stop in on the Money Doctor with you and Jess. And I commend you guys, you know, for adding some of this information. So it's great to be here.
Thank you for coming on. Well, hopefully you'll come back again. This is Dr. Bob Weil, the sports doctor, affectionately known as Dr. Bob.
And
thank
Francis,
you.
Can we get your phone number as well for a link to you?
You betcha. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.